So, very welcome to the next episode of Literaturnerd. And if you are wondering why I'm all of a sudden talking in a complete foreign language right now, it's because our guest is from New York City. And as I am guessing that some people that have never heard of this podcast in their lives, I will introduce it very briefly. Literaturnerd is a German podcast, which usually is German language, of course. And it has right now, I think, 35 episodes. And it's usually just about science fiction. Short stories, novels, science fiction scene, everything. And today I have two guests, and one is a guest, and the other one is co-moderating everything. And by the way, I'm Yvonne Thunert from Germany, next to the Baltic Sea, which is really nice, and I can see it right now. And I do lots of reviews. I am a reader, and I'm an author as well, but I read much more than I write. That's me. So, and I would like Jamie to introduce her first, and then our guest Angela, please.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. My name is Jamie Lee Campbell. Right now, I'm recording from Berlin. I'm writing short stories in weird and science fiction, and I also did an analysis about the characters of the German science fiction short stories to analyze what kind of backgrounds do they have, what kind of issues do they have, and how diverse they are. So I wrote a lot of essays in that term. There will also be one in English published in August, so that might be also interested for the more international audience for this episode. And I'm really looking forward for that interview.
Hi, Angela. I'm glad you're here.
Hi. Thank you for inviting me. So I'm Angela Liu. I write short fiction. I am also starting to write more long form. I mainly write in speculative fiction. And I started off writing fantasy. I've kind of veered more toward horror and sci-fi in the most recent writings. My work has been in Clark's World and Strange Horizons, Uncanny, and a number of other speculative magazines. I'm located in New York City. I originally did my master's in Japan at Keio University. I did my master's in mixed reality storytelling, so I have a lot of interest in kind of interactive narratives and things of that sort. Thank you for having me once again.
Yeah, thank you for coming. It's so exciting. And after researching you, I think you've started in earnest publishing short stories, at least in science fiction and horror, like 2 years ago.
So I actually started submitting at the end of 2021. I wrote a blog post about this, but I had a lot of trouble getting published in the very beginning. So my first acceptance was actually in poetry. So I actually started writing a lot of poetry before writing short fiction. But yeah, this entire submission and writing short fiction has been for about 2 years or so. So I'm heading into, I think the first submission I did was maybe November of 2021.
But you submit like, I don't know, haven't you told me like 2 dozen short stories a year, or was that including the poems?
Last year I had, I think, around 15 stories published. Around 12 short stories and 3 novelettes. I had around maybe 5 or 6 poems also published last year. But that's like, if I were to look at the number of submissions I did last year, that was like maybe almost 200 or so. So like the ratio, I think, of acceptances versus like actual like submissions is like, I don't know if the how good or how bad it is, but I submit a lot as well.
How can you produce so many different short stories and also poems? I guess I think it's both. What kind goes into the numbers of submissions, aren't it?
I have a lot of trouble focusing, and so I end up writing a poem or writing a story, and usually the idea just comes from like something I've seen or just some travel I've done or just anything basically. Like the idea just comes immediately from some very small thing. Like I. the story, say, for instance, for Purple Haired Girl in Clark's World, I remember just like playing with Midjourney in 2022, like right when before it got really messy. Like back then, it was just for fun. People like were thinking, oh, look at all these little prompts. You can see all these new images. And I remember the prompt, if you've used it before, is it was originally, I believe, a Discord group. Or not Discord. It was in a group, and you have to put in imagine and then colon, and then you put in the prompt. And I remember thinking that's so interesting and also kind of futuristic, but still kind of fantasy-like. Like you just literally are typing in imagine and anything you want it to be. And so I was like, I can think of a world where you can just say imagine and just pick anything out of like air. And so that was just like how the story prompt, like that's how the story started. So that's why like in the beginning of the story, it's literally imagine colon, like purple haired girl shooting down the moon. Like I just tried to think of the most absurd thing possible. And it just kind of fed into that way. And so all of those stories, they come from random things I've seen or heard. And then I'll write them. And then I kind of start losing focus a lot of the time. So maybe I'll write like 2 or 3 pages of it. And then I'll just get stuck or something will come up in life. And I'll just stop writing it. And then something else, I'll see something else. I just start writing something else. And so it just, like in my backlog, I have like maybe 5 or 6 stories that have never been finished. Just like ideas that I've written. Like some of them are like 6,000 words. And it's just sitting there waiting for eventually when I have like the interest again or the motivation, I guess, to write it. I'll finish it eventually. But I think it's just that lack of focus that ends up making me write so much.
So you don't do plotting before you write, you just write.
So I've never done, I think this is why I've had a lot of trouble with long form. Like I want to write a novel, but it requires so much plotting. And so I've always been a pantser. Like I just start writing and like I can write like thousands and thousands of words. And then in the middle, I'll just be like, what was I writing? Oh my God, what was that guy's name? I don't even remember.
Okay, I see. It doesn't feel like that when I'm reading your prose. Well, you have written on Twitter that you're editing a lot afterwards. So maybe you do all the plotting afterwards, which is also a way.
Oh, I just write. So I end up just writing and writing and writing. And then, like I said, I get stuck. And then it's like, okay, I need to think a little bit more right now. How is this going to continue? How am I going to tie back that first part? And then so I'll write the first draft and then I'll go back to it a lot of the times. And because it's usually very messy because I didn't plot a lot of it, it ends up being a long editing process. And so like, say for instance, for Pinocchio Photography, I remember it was a very different story in the beginning. It was actually not focused on the family. The original story was about the, you know, in the middle, there's another mother that comes in and she's going to take a photo with her ex-husband and the child. And it was mainly their story originally. Like it was a whole other story just focused on that family. And the parents' subplot was very small. Like it was kind of like a background story. And so it's like the main story is about the girl having her first experience with photographing a family. And then in the middle, she's like asking advice from her mom. And like throughout the process, she is like getting more information about her dad who's passed away and like the whole idea of lost memories and how you can kind of, you want to finish unfinished business kind of thing. But then like the more I explored it, it felt kind of shallow to me. Like I didn't feel like the characters from the other character, the other family, it felt very shallow. Like it felt like kind of this very surface interaction between the main character and this other family. And so I kind of wanted to delve a little bit deeper. And the more I tried to search for, I guess, that emotional core, it ended up going more toward the her family then, and more toward her father and like her mom. And so that's why like I just ended up writing those additional scenes. So the original story didn't even have any like it had the first scene with the dad eating when she was eating breakfast with her dad, but that was it. That was the only scene with the dad. And so all the subsequent scenes were added in later when I was exploring more about what was her reason for why she would why was she interested in this kind of postmortem photography? Like what was her reason for turning away from medicine and things like that? And so then I added in all those scenes after this. Like even the ending was not that ending. It was more about like, after she took the photo with the other family, she was like thinking about maybe I should call my mom. But it was like, which I feel like in retrospect is significantly less emotionally resonant for a lot of people, I think. Like, I remember after I wrote that story, a lot of people came back to me and were saying they liked it because it reminded them of their own family and like a lot of their own like experiences with their fathers. And so I feel like if it was the original story, it wouldn't have had the same type of emotional resonance.
I think that's really interesting that this is more like an implicit knowing what you're doing, because exactly at this story, I was really impressed about how good you put on layer over layer over layer to get more and more into the cure of emotion, as you said that, and you just catched me by the end. Also during the story, and I was really impressed how you structured it, and I thought, okay, you did that perfectly on purpose, and I wanted to ask you how you do it, and now you're just saying you have an implicit knowledge how to do it in that terrific way. So that's really interesting, because I really had the feeling you really know what you're doing with every sentence you give to me in that story. And it's interesting, perhaps this is the kind of thing you're doing in the editing process.
Yes, it's all the editing.
Yeah, because I've got the impression that all of your sentences and all of your words is perfectly consciously chosen by you to get me to the goal you want me to be. So that's a really interesting to see how you do the process on that.
Thank you.
And you also said, Yvonne, do you want to ask something for the Pinocchio story?
I just want to add that I'm really glad that now the dad has more scenes, because that's part of the reason I like the story so much, because I love the interaction between the daughter and the father, and I was expecting the ending, mm-hmm. but I would have been disappointed if it would have been different. So I'm glad that you're editing it so much afterwards.
Yeah, the scenes I added were just all of those subsequent father scenes, as well as I remember thinking that I wanted to put more about the actual company she was working at as well, like her interactions with her boss, and so that was also added in afterwards, just because like I felt like her boss said something that was also very important, which is just like you mourn and then you move on, like you get the work done. And I feel like that was also something that was very important to get across in this story, which is grief is something we all kind of deal with, but then you kind of have to move on for everyone to move on around you as well. Like her mom also was like, she's acting like she doesn't really mind that the father's passed away, but like by moving on together, her mom can also kind of explore her own grief a little bit more through the final scene that you can see when she's interacting with the father. And so in order for the main character to feel more like she can trust the boss's words, I kind of wanted to show a little bit more about her interactions with the boss as well as in that office. So all of those scenes were added in later through the editing process.
I just had the impression that you just go to the maximum possible extent with that story. You just say, okay, that's not enough to show how they're doing the photographs, and okay, I get another layer, like okay, they have this family with their lost one and they photograph it, okay, but that's not enough, we need to go more into deep to stretch this the theme as much as you can. Is that a thing which you do more or less on purpose in the drafting or in the editing process?
I think I like exploring the different aspects in general, and I always feel I'm always worried. I think it might be because when I was young, I think around maybe middle school or high school, I had a creative writing class. I think a lot of us have had that in the US especially. And I remember we wrote a short story or like poems, and he would literally write on the top of the page, cliche city. Like he would say, this is so surface level, like this is so bad, like you need to kind of dig deeper. And I think it traumatized a lot of the kids. So most of them did not want to write fiction or poetry anymore after that. But like it was such a deep memory, I feel like, for me. So a lot of the times when I approach my own writing now, I can still kind of hear that in the background. Like, is this cliche? Is this too surface level? And so I'm always conscious and I guess a little bit worried of things not being deep enough, kind of. So it's like, okay, are people going to be sad? Are they going to be properly able to relate to this main character? Are they going to be able to relate to this family's struggle? And so it's like, even in the final version, even if it doesn't have that, I feel like I still try to explore as many scenes as possible. And especially since I originally wrote novels, I never published any, but like I used to write long form just for fun. And I remember the first short story I wrote, which isn't published yet, it's coming out in Interzone Digital, I think in a month or two. But the first short story I wrote, I showed it to one of my best friends from middle school and high school. And she read it and she said to me, like, this is so, it felt like it was unfinished, kind of. Like, I didn't understand, I didn't feel like I completely felt for the characters. And it was like, that has been kind of my guiding thing with short fiction the entire time. It's like, can I properly convey this feeling and this struggle and all these conflicts and wrap them up neatly within these like fixed number of words? Especially since I find in the, particularly in the US, the short fiction tends to be like most of the magazines are like less than 5,000 words. And like most people say that they prefer like within 3,000 words or so. And it's like, okay, can you really get across an emotionally resonant story in 3,000 words? And that's like always the guiding point for me. I'm not sure how successful I am with all my stories, but I felt like for Pinocchio and things like Kwong's Bath, and like I particularly like Imagine Purple Haired Girl, like I felt like for those stories, I want to think I got across the emotional part of it. And like I want the reader to be able to feel like they kind of for this very small moment were in this world and could feel for those main characters.
Yeah, that's it. I think that's the main difference actually between the German-speaking science fiction scene and the Anglo-American scene, because we don't have enough emotions. It's usually all about the idea. I don't know if it's a German issue, if we don't like to show that we have feelings.
No.
Apart from just yelling. Oh, people will hate me. It's just that I usually prefer Anglo-American science fiction, especially in Clark's World or Uncanny or even Asimov's and Analog, which are more technical, but still they have a human, just have human figures that I can believe in and not just, I don't know what, people that have to carry the
cliches.
Idea. What?
Most of them are cliches.
Yes, maybe.
In Germany.
Oh, it's interesting because I remember I had a lot of trouble getting published in the beginning. And I remember a lot of the rejections that I got, the personal rejections that I got, they were almost always saying the same thing, which was, we didn't really relate to your character. Or like we didn't feel like it was explored enough emotionally. And that's always like anytime I get a rejection nowadays, I feel like that's one of the biggest issues, like in the personal rejection. It always says like we didn't really understand the main character, or we didn't feel like it was convincing their struggle and things like that. And so I don't know if it's specific to the US, but that kind of exploration of the interior and really being able to understand the motivations behind the character is a very important part of a story, especially for short fiction where there's such a short space to explore. And so a lot of the times when I'm writing, I just find like, I tend to like very high-paced fiction. Like, that's just my own taste. So things that are written very, very easily read kind of fiction. And so a lot of the times I'll just write it plot-wise. And then I'll find, like, I'll go back to it and then kind of add more of the inside the mind of the character. And so it's like the action happens first. Otherwise, I tend to, like, lose focus again. And so I'll just write out what happens. And then I'll go back and try to explore more about, okay, why did she go there? Why did she do this? And then as I do that kind of exploration, the story then starts to shape a little bit better, I think. If that makes sense.
It does make sense, yes. But I think there are two ways, or maybe at least two ways, these things could go wrong. If you don't show anything inside the character's had and might be okay if it's via actions and dialogue. I can feel that as a reader because I can relate. So that might be working, but you can't fill it with, I don't know how to, I can't come up with an English example like, she feels sad, she has tears in her eyes, blah, 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 you know. And I've already read that 1,000 times. So this doesn't work anymore for me. I need something fresh.
So specifically for that, like I was saying with the teacher in middle school, every time I try to write something that's very straightforward, I see the words cliche city just mentally wafting up into the air. And so, like, I can't, I think that's also, like, balance is so important. And I find personally, I have a lot of trouble balancing between showing and telling. So I tend to try to show more. And I find a lot of the time what I wanted to say gets lost because I didn't just outright say what the person was feeling or outright say what happened. And so I find that I can almost never write, she had tears in her eyes or something. Like, it always ends up having to be something like, it goes into a memory. Like, I like one of my favorite themes and favorite narrative devices is like memory and flashbacks. And so it's almost always the main character has some memory sequence. And it's supposed to be implied that this creates some type of sadness in her or some sadness in him. And so I almost can never say, like, even using the word he said, I always get kind of worried. Okay, am I using that word too many times? Like, do I need to have a little bit more about, like, the entire expression of the person themselves rather than just, like, he smiled or he said or he walked? Like, does it need to be a little bit more lyrical? Does it need to be a little bit more evocative? And I find that sometimes it tends to be overwritten then. Like, it starts kind of veering more toward purple prose. And so that's something, like, I've had a really hard time doing, like, a hard time balancing. Like, it ends up just being so much description that it just takes away from the pacing of the story then.
I think it depends what kind of emotions are the most important for the plot, isn't it? Because you don't need to show all of them. Sometimes it's okay just to recognize them on the side. And sometimes they're really important to see the switches or where the story goes. And then it makes totally sense to go and find unique pattern how to describe it. I think that was really interesting how you said that you go into the characters and really, really feel them, because then I think you be able to figure out new kind of expressions or you, with the memories, you can find a unique way to express or find words for the things we all know, because, well, you don't have millions of emotions. We all share the same patterns of emotions. We all know them, but they are always unique if you just match them with personal memories. Mm-hmm. And if I can relate to the memory, then I have a similar memory. So that makes it much more easier for me to address me as a reader on my feelings and not only to recognize, oh yeah, the character is now doing that. All right. I just see it from the outside. So I think that's a real cool way. And I asked myself, what kind of emotions do you most like to write about?
Oh, so I'm always told I can never write a happy ending. So I tend to really like, this sounds so bad. I really like sad stories. I really like writing sad stories. And so it always ends up veering into a sad ending. Like, even, I don't know if you've read the Time Traveler's Cookbook. I feel like the ending now is a little bit bittersweet, but the original ending was much more depressing. And I remember having a friend read it and they were like, this is too depressing. Like, because if you read the rest of the story, it's a very lighthearted story. It's a very, very happy kind of story. And then, like, when you get to the last part, it suddenly goes really, not dark, but it gets really depressing. And then so my friend who read it was like, oh, this is such a happy-go-lucky. Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
What just happened? And it's just like they felt it was not tonally deaf, but a little bit like there was no reason to go in that direction. It's like I was having such a good time. Like, what just happened? And so I feel like my stories definitely tend to explore more of the sadness in life, but I don't want it to just be sad. Like I don't want it to just be about misery. Like I find, like one thing that really stuck out with me was, for Imagine Purple Haired Girl, I remember a lot of the reviews have always been like, this is such a like ridiculously depressing story. This is like, it veers onto the point of like, well, this is just ridiculous kind of. And it's like, it's such a clear dystopian story. And I can't believe, like, I remember there were a lot of really bad reviews about how ridiculously depressing it was. Like, and I was just thinking like, I never considered it like to be absurd. Do you know what I mean? Like a lot of it is, I can understand why it's being read as depressing, but it never veered toward absurdity in my mind. Cause like, I don't know, I grew up in a very low income family. And so a lot of the things that are explored in that story, like say for instance, how hard like people working three shifts to survive, or just kind of this back alley working at brothels and things like that. I've seen it like growing up, like it's not something that is like absurd in my mind. Like I remember a lot of the things are like, this is so unrealistic. Like I can't believe this would happen to somebody. Like it's almost like kind of not revenge porn, but like, it's like needlessly making the characters suffer. And I was, from my perspective, it's not necessarily a dystopia just because people are suffering and working hard to survive. And so from my perspective, like I like exploring that kind of darkness in reality, but it's not meant to be just like only exploring the depressing part. Like for those characters, there's also like some light in their life. Like there's a friendship between those two characters. They clearly love each other a lot. And so there's always this multifaceted aspect to sadness and I think misery that I like to explore in the writing I do.
Sometimes I think it's much more difficult to write a story that isn't sad, that has a lot of humor in it, and have the people be impressed by it. Because in my personal experience, people, Jamie as well, are more impressed by my sad stories and not really.
Didn't read so much happy stories from you.
Yeah, but you didn't like it. So I think it's really, really difficult to write a happy story that is as impressing as a sad one. But I wasn't really, I personally wasn't depressed by Pinocchio Photography. I had a very good feeling reading it. But because it had such a nice way to deal with mourning people. And I think mourning is a very important part of our life and we can't leave it out. So, and it's a topic in my stories as well. And so I really enjoyed that short story. I didn't think it was depressing. It had sad moments, of course, but it was a very, how you say that? It was a poor life story.
I like the way my friend described the Pinocchio and like Kwong, which is more like it's devastating, but it's not sad. So it's like you feel really kind of emotionally wrought from the entire experience, but you don't feel like sad by the end. Like it's kind of hopeful, but it's like so emotionally kind of draining after reading it.
Yeah, and it also shows how to deal with that deep and heavy emotions. And I think that's also interesting. And I really like that in your writing, that you just go there and have a look on that without being anxious about it. Because we all have these feelings. We all have the whole pattern of feelings. And this is these are feelings which are often not discussed about because people have them for in loneliness or in isolation. So I think that's also something perhaps why we more read about these feelings, because they are difficult to express besides words, and it's important to find words for them because they feel so unique. And I also thought about what Yvonne was saying about it's difficult to write about happy emotions, and so I thought Perhaps it's also difficult for us to have a distinct feeling how happy feels for us, because I for myself have this feeling, okay, I'm happy or I'm glad, but I don't go into detail to figure out how that feeling is really, does really look for me to have a pattern how of good feeling for myself, where I'm much more distinctive in the feeling of sadness or grief. So I can much more, I'm much more able to distinct them in graduations or is it graduation? In different grades, different graduation. Mm-hmm. And I don't have it for happy feelings. So that makes it for me really difficult to get get a touch on these happy feelings because it's just happy. It's just one category. Yeah. And it would be easier if I have a distinct feeling for myself to find words for it. And then perhaps I could also be taken more serious if I'm able to find a deficit description on that and not just having the whole the one tip of, okay, characters happy.
Well, that's really interesting because since we're having this discussion, I'm thinking about it a little bit, and I always find with like happy emotions or happy occurrences, like we like to look at them, but we don't tend to kind of, it doesn't feel as much like as a person you reach out looking for someone when you're happy, I guess. If I don't know if that's just like a personal thing, but I feel like with misery and loneliness and those type of emotions, it's like we kind of seek out or we kind of relate more to people or we want to relate more to people. Like when you look at a sad scene, you feel really for that person. Like there's a lot more empathy, I feel like, when it comes to sadness. And so when it comes to happy emotions, I feel like it doesn't really trigger that kind of empathy or compassion in people as much as sadness tends to be. Like if you see a really sad movie, you immediately think, oh my, I felt so bad for that person on in that movie. But if you see someone really happy in the movie, you're like, oh yeah, I really felt happy for them. It doesn't feel like that as much. I don't know if it's me personally, but like I always, whenever I watch a sad movie, it sticks with me for so much longer. And I end up thinking about like, oh, what could he have done? Or what could she have done? What could they have done? Like all of those like regrets. And I just like feel so much for that character, like when it's that type of emotion, as opposed to like when they're happy, it feels like there's nothing really left to explore. Like it doesn't stick in my mind as much anymore. It's like, okay, they were happy. That's great. I feel kind of happy as well. But it's like, it doesn't prompt me to think about it longer. It doesn't prompt me to really like keep them in my thoughts, I guess.
Maybe it needs more time. When I want to relate to somebody who's really happy, maybe it's necessary to have see the person before in another state and then really relate to the happiness. Because when I now remember having been happy for figures in novels, it's usually in long novels, like Ken Follett novels, this big, like 1,000 pages or so. And then in the end, when they are happy, I'm happy too, because I know them already. But in a short story, I think it's really difficult.
Yeah. One device I tend to use a lot, I didn't realize until someone pointed it out to me, was that I tend to end a lot of stories with a happy memory. And so it's like, it's happiness kind of shaded in sadness or shaded in bittersweetness. And so like, say for instance, I don't know if you've read Kwong's Bath, but like that ends kind of with before the final scene, it ends with her thinking about like the happiest scene with her sister, like kind of making cakes with instant ramen and like the kind of life that they had beforehand. And like for Purple Haired Girl, it was like, it ends with a memory of her and her friend Mina before like everything else happened. And so there's like that kind of happy memory when they were still kind of students or still kind of like before they started working. And like even for, I'm not sure about Pinocchio, but like that also it threads through these kind of happy-ish memories as well. And so I end up like kind of using happiness as a way to kind of feed into sadness, I guess. So it's like you reflect on a happy memory that already passed and that causes kind of a sadness in the person. I don't know. I tend to be very chronophobic. Like I'm very scared of the passage of time in general. And so I especially get really sad thinking about happy memories that have already passed.
Just had one idea about the more intense feeling of bad emotions is we're seeking for external validation. That's when you say, okay, I have to share it with somebody to get the resonance that it's okay that I feel that way. We don't need that for happy emotions.
Yeah.
I like the way that you combine the happy emotions with also personal memory, because that also allows me to resonate with the character's happiness, because we all have different things that make us happy. And I think we have similar things that make us sad. Perhaps that's also a thing what makes it a bit easier to spot that. Yvonne, do you have one?
And not about the emotion stuff, about other stuff. So if you want to talk about emotions further.
I'm fine with the emotional part. How are you, Angel?
Because I was wondering, at the beginning you told us you were rejected a lot. And I heard from German authors who try to publish in Anglo-American magazines that this is really more difficult than it is in Germany, for example. I think in Germany it's not really difficult to get published. But if you want to get published by Clark's World, you have to. There are so many steps. You have to jump over so many walls. It's really difficult. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about how you began submitting and where and when it finally worked. Because I heard, for example, Connie Willis, who's really famous now, was rejected a lot at the beginning as well.
So I remember I first submitted to, I submitted actually to literary magazines in the very beginning because I knew nothing. And so I find like when you just like Google places to submit, literary magazines tend to come up first. And so I always bring up the story about like the very first submission I had was to the New Yorker because that was the only magazine I knew about. And so I remember submitting to the New Yorker and knowing absolutely nothing about submitting stuff in general and thinking, oh, I think they rejected my story. And then I got like I actually got a response after 3 months, which apparently is supposed to be amazing. But like at the time it was a rejection and I was so sad.
Oh, no.
And like, that was how I got started. And so I mainly submitted to like literary magazines. I submitted to contests because like in general, I think contests pour a lot of money into promotion. And so it's like also one of the first things you end up seeing. And so after a while, like I just had no success at all, obviously, for literary and contests. And so then I started kind of digging a little bit deeper. And that's how I found other magazines that I wanted to submit to. And so I started submitting to The Dark. I think Clark's World was also one of the first places I submitted to. Obviously, a rejection for that. It was the first place speculative magazine I submitted to was also a rejection. And so The Dark, Strange Horizons, Clark's World, and those were all the magazines, the ones that tend to be open. I remember I submitted Strange Horizons poetry because the poetry is always open. And The Dark also is always open, as is Clark's World. And as like, I don't know how much you guys know about like the magazines here, but a lot of the pro ones tend not to be open throughout the year. So like, say for instance, Uncanny and even Strange Horizons for fiction, they only open like once or twice a year. And so I didn't even think about submitting to them in the beginning, even though I like been reading their magazines. And, so I submitted to those magazines, obviously rejections. I had no idea because at the time I tended to just like, I wrote whatever. And then I just submitted it. Like, I remember the first story I submitted to maybe like 20 magazines. And obviously all rejected, all four rejections, one after the other. And like, it's so depressing when you're not used to submitting at all. Like, I remember it took me so long just to start submitting. Like, I've been writing my whole life, mainly just because I love writing. And it, like, growing up, it was one of the only things I could do on my own. Like, my parents were not really home that often. And so it was like something I could write to escape and like just explore a world that seemed more interesting to me. And then, but I never wanted to show anyone my writing. I don't know. I'm sure if that's true for a lot of writers, but it was so scary to me to show another person my writing. And so like, I just spent decades just writing for fun. And then eventually I decided to start submitting to places. So I was not ready for rejection at all. Cause I was already really scared of showing people the stuff. And so then rejection. I got my first acceptance, which was a poem from Strange Horizons. I'm so thankful to Strange Horizons because I think like if I had not gotten that acceptance at that point for the poem, I might have just stopped writing. I might have just stopped writing short fiction and poetry in general because it's just so devastating that like getting nonstop rejections when you don't really understand the industry. I think especially as like a new writer, like, because I had never really written short fiction before that, you just feel so inadequate. Like, you just, because especially since the rejections are always form rejections, but you don't even realize they're form rejections when you just start off. So you actually take every word as is. So when, like, I don't remember it was like Apex or like one of those magazines where it's just like, this, we were not interested in this. It was, this was, doesn't meet our, in, this doesn't meet our needs. I find that, like, that's then to be a very standard form rejection. This doesn't meet our needs right now. When you read it as a new writer and you don't have that many rejections yet, you just think, oh my God, like, I'm clearly so bad at writing. This is why, like, like, I keep getting the, this doesn't meet our needs, or thank you, but we are respectfully rejecting this right now. And so I got that acceptance from Strange Horizons, and it was like just enough to keep me writing a little bit, or keep submitting. And like several months later, I got my first fiction acceptance from The Dark for, I don't know if you've read it. It's a very clear, like, horror story, like Pakka. It's about a guy who thinks he's a frog. But that's actually my very first fiction story. And it's inspired by a bar located in Tokyo. So I always get my story ideas from something I've seen or experienced. And so that got that, the months between the Strange Horizons acceptance for poetry and The Dark, like, I remember just like telling my husband, telling my friends, I think I'm like done. Like, I don't think I can keep doing this. Like, I'm never going to get published. I'm never going to find someone who wants to read anything I write. And then I got the acceptance, and I remember thinking, oh my God, like, I had to read it over and over again, like, just to make sure it wasn't a mistake. And I remember, like, it got published, and like a lot of people can relate to this, which is like, when you get the acceptance and you get the publication, you think, okay, I'm a writer now, right? But then, like, because the short fiction industry, I do think a lot of people read, but it's not nearly as big as like the novel industry. That, so when you get a publication, especially if you have like no exposure on social media or any of those other channels that I think a lot of those magazines tend to use, I remember thinking, okay, it's published. Where are people reading it? And then there was like no feedback at all. I remember thinking, no one has read this story. Oh my God, like, what happened? And I was so devastated in a different way. It's like, okay, you got published, but no one is reading it. Like, you don't get any feedback, and you're just like, oh, is this it? Is this what it's going to be like? And I remember thinking that for the entire first year I was submitting. So like all of 2022, I don't know, like, if you can see on my like bibliography, but like 2022, I had two stories. So they were both at The Dark. One was the story about a guy who thinks he's a frog. And then the other story is about, it's more of a science fiction horror story. Like Olympus is a body. And both of them, I felt like no one had read. And I remember being so depressed and all, like, in a different way, thinking maybe this is the end. And like, I love submitting. I think a lot of people can relate to how submitting short fiction tends to be a little bit like a drug addiction, where it's like you submit and then you like wait for the dopamine rush of like either a rejection or an acceptance. And so I remember submitting those. They both got published. The Dark is wonderful in the sense that they get back to you very quickly. And so like you'll know whether or not you're accepted most of the time within like a month. And then they publish it like that month. They publish it the month right after. So it's like there's not a lot of time to wait for gratification. But for both of them, and as well as my poems, I remember I had two poems come out that year as well, and both in Strange Horizons. And same feeling where it's just like, I don't know if anyone read them or not. I'm sure there were people because both of those magazines have a huge readership. But it's like, because there's no real channel for those readers to get back to you, you feel like no one read any of them. And so I just remember thinking, like, what am I doing? Kind of. And then, like, in addition to that, I'm getting, like, hundreds of rejections again for the newer stories I'm writing. And then around that time, I started thinking, like, okay, maybe I should think more about, like, where I'm submitting. It's not, like, a numbers game. I feel like a lot of the times you're told it's a numbers game, like, where it's just, like, submit to as many places as possible. And it's just, like, it feels so inefficient to me. So, like, my background previously where I used to work was, like, as a strategist at an ad agency. So it's just like, that's all about like marketing. That's all about like thinking about brands and the target that you're trying to reach. And so I started thinking more about like, okay, what does this magazine actually want? Like, what is the tone of the stories that they're taking? What are the readers that are reading it? And so then I didn't change how I write, I felt like, or I guess I tried, and that game became too depressing. Like, if you're writing purely for the sake of getting published, I feel like the stories tend to be kind of not stagnant, but it doesn't feel like yourself anymore. And so I tried to find more like, okay, this specific story I think might appeal to this magazine more. And so it's just like, instead of submitting to like 50 different magazines at the same time, just focus on that one place, especially since a lot of magazines don't take simultaneous submissions. I was like, okay, I'm not going to leave my story at a magazine that's not going to even be like considering it. And so it just became more of like a pinpointed submission process. And I felt like once I changed that way of doing things, it became so much easier. Not easy, it's still horribly hard to get accepted anywhere, but I felt like I had a lot more success than I did my first year of submitting, where it's just like submit to everywhere possible. And I also felt like another big thing that I changed in my strategy was like, I stopped submitting or caring about magazines that I didn't think would ever take anything I like or anything I write. So it's not, I still love those magazines. I still read them all the time, but I can tell like, okay, this magazine is not something I would write. And so it's just like, I don't need to send anything to this magazine because I know they're not going to take any. Like, so then you don't like, it's easier then to then like give up on stuff and not get like needless, depressing rejections. I feel like people say that you get rejections and it becomes like you kind of form this iron core where you don't care as much, which is true. Like, I don't get nearly as depressed about my rejections as I did in the first year. But it's like, there's no reason to make yourself sad from a rejection or like, because I really think subconsciously, every rejection kind of like pokes your self-conscious, like your self-confidence a little bit, even if you say it doesn't. And so there's no reason to kind of build up these like small jabs for magazines that you know probably are not aligned with the type of writing you want to do. And so like, specifically, I felt like Apex and like Beneath Ceaseless Skies are like magazines I like, but like I don't think I write in that style. Like, I don't write high fantasy, and that's like before technology. And the tone of Apex, I love a lot of their stories, but I don't think I write anything that fits there. And so like, sometimes if I do write something, I'll send it to them, but like I don't send every new story there. Because it's really unnecessary to make yourself sad. And also for me specifically, I really like the interactions with other readers. And like when people read it and they ask a little bit more about the story, I love that interaction. Like, I think that's one of the biggest things that keeps people interested in writing fiction, is that interaction with readers. And so I find that I submit less and less to anthologies, just because like anthologies tend to be kind of behind a paywall, so it's not as accessible to a wider range of readers. And I mean, I love a lot of anthologies. I'm in a lot of anthologies. One of the anthologies I was in recently that I absolutely love was Escalators to Hell, which was my first solicitation, like first solicited story. So I'm very kind of not sensitive, but I love that magazine. The concept was so interesting to me because I love Maul. I don't know if you've read the anthology. It's about Maul horror. So the concept in general, I was so interested in because like I grew up going to a lot of malls. And as in the US, it's such a like institution, the mall. And so, but at the same time, it's kind of like dying out a little bit in the US. And so this exploration of mall horror that's like nostalgic, but also futuristic, and also kind of investigating these kind of emotions of degradation and kind of not really like kind of a sad nostalgia, but kind of also a horrific nostalgia, like things that you can't really let go. Like, I found that all of those themes that people explored in that anthology were really interesting. But anthologies in general, I find to be not as much to my own taste. Like, I tend to like those kind of free to read magazines. And so I tended to end up writing less for those anthologies, especially since they tend to be themed. And so if you write a story for a themed anthology, I find like a lot of writers I talk to, if it doesn't get accepted by that anthology, you don't know what to do with the story anymore. Like, especially if it's a very, very pinpoint kind of story. And so I ended up just like writing less for anthologies and more for just like whatever I felt like writing, I just ended up writing. I'm sorry, I think that was a very long-winded answer, but...
It seems that there are some things that aren't so different in the US as they are in Germany. I like to go back to the interaction with readers. So if you're publishing in Clark's World, which might be the best read magazine in the US science fiction, isn't it?
I think there are many. From my perspective, from my understanding, like fantasy and the magazine of fantasy and science fiction tends to be like the really big one that everyone wants to get into. But because I think it's also one of those paid magazines, it has like the prestige, but I don't think it's as open to other people reading it as easily as some like a magazine like Clark's World or Uncanny. And so from my personal experience, I do find that I've gotten the most comments about my stories from my stories in Clark's World. So I do think the readership tends to be significantly larger than a lot of other magazines. But at the same time, I've gotten a lot of feedback on my story, Kwong's Bath, which was in Choreo, as well as Uncanny, the story I recently released in January, my flash fiction on Uncanny, that also got a lot of feedback. But yeah, I think Clarksville definitely has the largest readership out of the magazines that I've gotten into, I think.
And it's really nice because Kwong's Bath, and I think the Clark's World stories as well, have an audio version as well.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I love audio. If you read Time Traveler's Cookbook, that also has an audio version, because that magazine is originally a podcast. Like, it's one of the Escape podcasts. And so I've never been an audiobook type of person. Like, I never listen to stories. I don't know. It's so difficult for me to focus on them. Ironically, I heard it's actually better for people that can't focus, but I never can focus on listening to them. And so, but I, at the same time, I talk to a lot of readers, and it's amazing how many people just listen to the audio version of the story. Like, it helps you reach a whole new group of readers if there's an audio version, I think, especially for longer fiction. So like, if you're writing novelettes and novellas, it's almost, I don't know if it like increases it by like, it makes it double or whatnot, but like, it feels like a lot more people read it if it's there's an audio version for a longer story.
What is this in numbers? Do you get feedback from like 10 people, 50 people, 200 people, or what's your feeling?
Oh, no. I'm happy to even get like 5 or 6 people giving me specific feedback about a story. I feel like short fiction in general, it's very difficult, like I said earlier, about people actually reaching you. So unless they're like following me on Twitter, or they're following me on Blue Sky or some other social media that I tend to post on, it's like they have a very difficult time, I think, contacting me about feedback. So I think for me, originally, I still tend to do this, which I don't recommend to a lot of new writers, because you find things that you don't necessarily want to find. But I very, very actively like scour the internet for like any type of review or any type of feedback for stories I've written. Like, Goodreads is another huge website that, like, for instance, for Clark's World, you will get reviews for that. There aren't reviews for like smaller magazines, which is unfortunate. But yeah, I'd be happy to get like 5 or 6 very specific feedbacks. I think for like social media, you might get like likes for a story you've written, but like, you can't really know for sure if someone's actually read it or not. So someone going out of their way, I think, to comment and like say something about your story is amazing. And I think like just getting like 5 or 6 is just already something that I'm very, very happy to get. I don't think I've seen anyone ever get like 200 feedbacks for a short story or like a short fiction. But yeah, just getting 10, I think, would be amazing. So say, for instance, like Pinocchio, I maybe got around 10 or 15 specific comments from people. But like, when you get a comment from someone that's like totally not in your like community, it's so amazing, because you realize the range or the span of this magazine. So like, I remember when I had Pinocchio published, I was getting feedback from people that are not even really in the writing community, There were other like programmers, there were other journalists. I remember being like blown away by that. So it's just like, even if it's like only two or three of those type of people, just the fact of that is like, you can already know from like a numbers perspective, that's like only what percentage of people would actually contact you that actually read your story. So it's just like, I would think like 1% of people would contact you. So then that means, oh my God, that's that many more people outside of your community already reading your story.
Oh, I have to review more short stories, more English ones. I always thought you would get so much feedback, like 50 or so, and wow.
No. I've talked to a lot of other writers. I don't know anyone that's gotten that many like feedbacks for their short stories. I hear that a lot for like even for novels. I feel like really well done novels, they still only get like maybe 100 like reviews. And then like they might have sold like tens of thousands of copies. And so it's just like, I feel like the percentage of people that actually contact you about your writing is so small. But then like you randomly talk to someone, they're like, yeah, I read that story. I was like, oh, I had no idea you read that story. But then I think in general, people don't tend to contact. The ones that are really amazing are the people that go to your website and go out of their way to contact you on the contact form. That's the one that always gets me. And like I am actually really good friends with someone that I met through that way.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think we might even have a better percentage then, because I don't think we have more than, I'm really sure we don't have more than 700 active science fiction people in Germany. And it's highly unlikely that if you have a short story in Germany, that more than 700 people will read it. And I usually get like 7 feedbacks, I guess.
Well, that's really good though. Even if the community is only, you said, 700 people, getting 7 reviews is really amazing.
Maybe we are better connected because we are so few. We all know each other.
I remember I think there's a specific report that's done every year about the readership for each magazine, which I think might be interesting to look at. I don't remember the exact numbers, but I remember being really surprised that some of the magazines were only like getting thousands of readers. Like I had an image of like tens of thousands of readers. But yeah, a lot of, especially in the US, I find there are more and more like kind of smaller magazines that are spouting out, like just popping up. And I'm actually really interested in knowing the number of readers for each of those magazines, because like you do see a lot, it's very unfortunate, but you see a lot of those magazines kind of closing. And it's just like, is it because of the readership or because it's difficult to monetize or it's difficult to run? But like I'm sure there are many factors.
I read that a lot recently because I read the Locus, and they usually tell their readers when a magazine shuts down. I think it was the Magazine of Fantasy or something really important shutting down.
I remember Fireside. Yeah, Fireside was a really big one that closed last year, 2 years ago. A lot of the indie publishers I find also are going on hiatus. And it's just, I do think there's a huge readership. I do think there's a lot of interest in it. It's just, it's difficult to monetize, I think, in general, these magazines. Especially, I do think the writers should be compensated. Like, especially if you look at the literary magazines, they will take a story that's like 4,000 words and not pay you a cent for it. And I think that's the standard in literary fiction, unless you're getting published at like the New York or something where they might pay you like thousands of dollars for your story. But the one thing I absolutely loved about the speculative fiction and like science fiction and fantasy fiction in the US and these magazines is like, they will still pay you something. Like a lot of them will pay you something, even if it's like a token amount. At some of the smaller magazines, like they might give you only like 1 cent a word or like $10 or $20 a story. It's still, they will pay you and they won't charge you to submit most of the time. And like the bigger magazines like Clark's World, they'll end up giving you like 12 cents a word. And so it's just like, I really love that feeling of like, as a writer, you're more appreciated and compensated for the time that you put into a story. Like some people, myself included, you'll spend weeks or months writing a story. And if you get paid nothing for it, it just feels like you do it obviously because you love the writing. But at the same time, it's so much more motivating when you feel like people appreciated your writing and time enough to compensate you for it. And I feel like as an industry and as like an ecosystem, maintaining that is so pivotal to like kind of fostering new talent and things like that. But yeah, for a lot of those magazines, I wanted to mention, I keep forgetting, but like, I think a lot of magazines tend to turn to Kickstarters now to maintain themselves, which is, I guess, if it works, it works. That's great. But I don't know how sustainable that is if like every magazine is just doing a Kickstarter to survive.
I think there's something really important I wanted to ask you about the editing process. So usually when you submit a story and it gets accepted, how's the editing process? Is there done still a lot of work with the story, or do they accept it and only correct some grammar issues, or how does it work usually?
So I think it depends on the magazine. So say, for instance, for The Dark, like my first two acceptances, it was just it published as is. Like I was actually really surprised because I was expecting an editing process, but it's just like you get the acceptance, you get the contract, and it's just like it's published. Like there was no editing, except for my story specifically. I don't know about other people at The Dark, but like for my two stories, there was no editing process involved. For our magazines like Choreo, I love their editing process because it's not minute, but it's very, very, very detailed and in a very writer friendly way. So I find like they'll send you the file and they'll be like, maybe you should like explore this idea a little bit more and clarify these aspects a little bit more. But it's not just like critiques or negative aspects at all. Like there's a lot of like, I loved this sentence here, or like this was like, this made me cry or something like that. And so I'd love that type of editing process where it's like helping you push your writing forward, but at the same time kind of reinforcing your confidence as a writer so that you can kind of answer the critiques or the things that they want you to develop further. And so they're very minute, they're very detailed in their editing process. And that was over like several weeks. So you'd get like one round of editing. I'd send them back the edits and then they send me back more comments. It's not like, it wasn't stressful. It didn't feel like they're kind of trying to change my story. But yeah, that editing process was very, I felt like it helped my writing a lot. Clark's World is another, Neil is like one of my favorite editors. He's not very heavy-handed with the editing, but he really kind of digs into a specific area that you also as a writer probably were thinking about. And so like, say for instance, for Imagine Purple-Haired Girl, he would specifically like point out a section that I was also kind of iffy on when I was writing it. And he like digs into it, just like, okay, you need to describe this a little bit more. And it's just like, it's not going into like your writing is unclear. Like that type of editing tends to be a little bit difficult for me, specifically when they're like, we don't like this sentence, or like, like those type of edits I don't tend to like as much. But Neil is not like that at all. He's very much like about trying to bring the story forward. So it's just like this aspect of the, like this world building part, I think you should explore a little bit more. And like, he never kind of tells you need to do it. But like, there's just like, it really is helpful, I think, the way he tends to do the editing. But yeah, a lot of those edits for like Clark's World, Choreo, Strange Horizons is another one. Like there's usually small edits. They never tend to be like, okay, you need to rewrite this entire thing for me to publish it. I do hear about like people getting like rewrite acceptances, like you have to rewrite it and then they will accept it. But I've never had one of those before. I think they tend to just be like, it's accepted, and then I do a little bit of editing and then it's done, and then it's published as is. And then there are those places that don't do any edits and then just publish as is. But a lot of the places tend to be copy edits only. And so it's just like, okay, we're going to change the wording here a little bit because it's unclear. And then like, it's always a conversation. So if you don't agree with them, they will like be, okay, that's fine. I've never had anyone be like, no, we must change this word right here. But yeah, the editing process, I haven't had that many bad editing experiences. So yeah, that's just my personal experience. I do find sometimes the timing tends to be tough, where it's just like, we need these edits in 2 days.
Oh, God.
And so those tend to freak me out a little bit, but like you get it done. Like it's never like, okay, I'm not going to get this done in time. but sometimes the timing tends to be sudden.
I would also like to go into a different direction, if that's okay. I don't know if you have some more questions about editing, Yvonne. No? Then you said you had some novels. You wrote some novels. Do you plan to challenge yourself to finish them, for example, or just to find a publisher?
So I have like 3 novels that are pending. Like one of them is like this monster file that's like 400,000 words, which I don't want to even touch anymore. But the other two, they're unfinished. And so I've been really struggling to finish them. I think once I'm done, I would probably go the traditional route, which is like querying to get an agent. And then after, if you by some miracle land an agent, then you would do the whole editing process and then try to submit the story to publishers. So that's what I would like to do. Like for this year specifically, I wanted to focus more on that instead of short fiction. Because one of the main reasons I started writing short fiction was because I really wanted to practice finishing things. And so I feel like, okay, I've had enough practice finishing things. Maybe I should try to finish this much longer thing now. I do also have like 2 novella-sized works as well that probably also need editing. But it's just like, okay, you, when you're a writer, you really need to focus on like what you're going to finish. Because it's just like, if you try to do everything at once, which is what I've been doing, it's just unsustainable and it burns you out so quickly. Like writing 5 or 6 stories at the same time or poems and whatnot. And trying to write the book at the same time. It just totally burns you out. Like, I know I want to do everything, but it's just unsustainable.
Yeah, it sounds like, again, to do it in the second step, as you described it with, what was the name for it? How you offer your drafts to someone to get published. So like going more into detail and decide consciously what to do next and what to do in this time frame. So it sounds like that a bit more.
I mean, creatively, I feel like I don't have the mental capacity to do long fiction, like novels, and do short fiction at the same time. Like every time I start writing the novel and I get like a short story idea, it just ends up distracting me the whole time. I think specifically for novels, it requires you to kind of delve much more deeply into the characters and the mindset and the world building. So if you just get distracted, it takes you out of the world completely. And then it's so hard to get back into like the emotional motivations behind the characters for what they're doing. Because like if I start writing a short story on the side, it goes into that world. And then when I try to go back into the novel, it's like I still have the other characters from the short fiction in my head. So it just kind of bleeds into the novel writing then. And it's just like, wait a second, that character was not like this originally. And like it's been totally kind of stained by the short story. And so it's like if I want to do long fiction, probably I need to completely just close down the short fiction shop for a few months and just focus only on that.
I can relate to that. And so I think we have bombed the hour. Again, my last podcast did as well. But it's so interesting.
Yeah, thanks for your answers and the openness of your answers. It was really interesting.
I learned a lot.
No, thank you.
Yeah, maybe we will meet again some other day, maybe after your first novel is published. No pressure.
Looking forward. I hope eventually. I hope I can just finish it.
Yeah, that's a good first step. I'm far away from that point yet. Cool. Thank you for visiting us. I'm really excited about it. And maybe on my way back home, I can listen to the podcast of Time Traveler's Cookbook. How long is the story?
It's actually one of my shorter stories. I think it's around 3,000 words only. I don't know if that's
short. I'm 20 minutes in the car, so maybe that's sufficient. We will see. Cool.
Thank you.
I'd love to hear your opinion. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm really curious about it. So, have a nice day.
You too. Thank you again for having me. All your really thoughtful questions.